Boker Tov World. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed. And yesterday we made some headway already on daf Lamed. We got up to the Tanu Rabbanan. So we've been discussing all types of hoda'ot that were made in front of witnesses or in front of dayanim. What is considered to be a hoda that is mechayev, the difference between making a kinyan with the hoda, not making a kinyan, whether it's in front of three or in front of two, setting aside people as witnesses, or just saying it in a serious way in front of them, as the Rambam says. Anyway, we're up to the Tanu Rabbanan, which are four lines up from the larger lines. Okay? Tanu Rabbanan. Omar lahem echad ani ra'iti avichem sheitmin ma'ot b'shidat teva u'migdal. So suppose somebody tells children. Now we're talking about not that he goes to Bezdin, he tells the children. The question is whether his testimony is mechayev the children to take it seriously. I saw your father hide money in a particular place, b'shidat teva u'migdal, somewhere in a suitcase or in a closet, and he told me at that time that this money belongs to Mr. So-and-so, or he said this money is my Sersheni money, and it's not meant to be used stam for chulin. If it's babayit, if the place that he said is a place inside of the father's home, and the father now has died, but this witness had no access to it, so then lo amar klum, what the witness said is meaningless. They don't have to believe a witness, even though you'll say a single witness is believed usually for Isser, if not for Momon. And over here, he's saying that it's Meiser Sheni, and saying that it's Meiser Sheni creates an Isser in using it. So that should be the same as somebody saying this thing is not kosher or something like that. So Ramban explains that where we're dealing with Meiser Sheni, we're also dealing with taking the money away from the Hedyot and giving it instead to Meiser. So that is essentially a monetary loss, and therefore we don't listen to an aid when it comes to losing money to an aid echad. If, however, that place that he says, and he identifies where that place is in the middle of a field somewhere, which if the witness wanted to be mafsid them the money, he would have been able to just go and take it. So in that case, he is believed because it was biyado. Klalo shel davar, basically, the way to determine the halacha is, if it's biyado litlan, if the guy is in a position that he could have taken it himself and therefore caused whatever laws he's coming along to cause with his testimony, then dvarav kayamim. But if ein biyado litlan, lo amar klum. It doesn't matter what he says, where he does not have the ability to take it himself. How about if the children themselves see their father hiding money in a particular closet or something? And he sees them looking at him. So he tells them, shall Ploniam, listen, this money belongs to so-and-so, or it's Meiser Sheni money. So it depends. If he seems to be actually Moser, he's giving them the, you know, he's telling them very seriously, listen, if anything happens to me, you know, you have to know that this money has to be returned to so-and-so. So then he's obviously being very serious with them. It doesn't matter if he's literally sick, dying, or anything like that. Sometimes people say things to make sure that their children know what's up when they can no longer tell them anything. So if it's with that type of seriousness, then dvarav kayamim. If he just seems to be saying, oh yeah, don't worry about this money, it's Meiser Sheni or something like that, so then lo amar klum. Because remember that we said before that we often will assume that a person wants others to think that the money does not belong to them. So he doesn't want his kids to just go and take money from there. He doesn't want the kids to just start spending. Oh wow, dad's got so much money. So it could be that he said it for that purpose. That's called ma'arim. So he's basically deceiving them on some level. Then it doesn't mean anything, because as we said before, the person will sometimes say things. Obviously, it's contextual. Now, let's say a person knows that his father left him money. His father dies suddenly, and then he has no idea where his father has put that money. And so he has a dream. And the dream master comes and tells him in the dream, "Aha, looking for your dad's money, are you? Well, here it is. I'll tell you exactly where to go. It was $304,000.61 in an envelope, which is on the third roof beam from the left." Okay. Wakes up and he goes, "But," he tells him, "you should know that that is the money, but it's Meiser Shani money." This actually happened. The guy went up to the third roof beam on the left, found that exact amount of money in an envelope, and he came to ask Besdin whether he really has to give it to Meiser Shani. And they said, what is this? The law takes into consideration magic and dreams. You crazy? You found the money. Use the money. Isn't right. Now, that's what I call rationality, huh? Divrei chalomot lo ma'alin v'lo moridin. Dreams mean nothing. That's even in the context where he got that envelope through that dream. Anyway, getting back to our Mishnah now. So we've been talking about, until now, the psul of the Edus, the relationship of putting together various testimonies. How about when it comes now to giving out a verdict? So we said the next thing in the Mishnah was that if you've got two of the Dayanim saying that he is Zakai, and one saying he's Chayav, and so on and so forth. So we always follow when it comes to monetary issues. We always go according to the majority, and that's based on the Pasuk, Achrei Rabim La'atot. Question is, if we're giving out a verdict that is written up from the business, it's going to be used by other Batei Dinim to collect money and so on and so forth, how exactly do we write up the verdict? Because we said in the Mishnah, well, you don't go and say, this particular judge said that he's Chayev, and this particular judge said that he's Potter, and a judge that goes out of the Beis Din and he talks to one of the litigants and he says, you know, I really was on your side, but what can you do? You have to go according to the Rov, that's considered to be a Hoylech Rochel, and a Mikal Asoid. But how about if you're writing it up? So do you just write it up as if the entire Beis Din agreed, even if they didn't? So Rabbi Yochanan says, you just write, this person was found Zakai in our court. That's all you need to write. You don't mention the fact that there were differences of opinion in the court. You certainly don't mention the sources of the difference of opinion by citing one Dayan versus another Dayan. Rish Lakish says exactly the opposite. If you're writing up a verdict, then it has to be a completely honest write-up. And otherwise, it's considered to be a mirsik shikra. So you have to say, the following judges said that he was Zakai, and the following judge said that he's Chayev, and therefore we went according to the majority. So you actually give out all the information that in the Mishnah we said, that if a person goes out and speaks, he is considered to be a Megalas Sod. Rabbi Elazar Amar, well, you don't exactly do what Rish Lakish says to spell it out, but you don't do what Rabbi Yochanan says either. And we don't want to make it look like this was a unanimous determination of the court to just write the word Zakai. So what we do is we make it plain by the way that we phrase it that there had been a disagreement in the court, but that midivrehem, out of the various opinions and the diunim in the court, it turned out that Nizdaka Ploni, that such and such a person did not have to pay. So, in other words, we are indicating that there was a disagreement. We're not saying who, and it doesn't look, therefore, like it's Sheker, because we made it very clear that it wasn't unanimous. So what exactly are we arguing here? My Benayo. Well, the question over here is, Ika Benayo, let's say that it turns out that the majority made a mistake and that they caused a loss. And it was one of those cases, which, of course, we're going to be going into detail where a court is responsible for a misjudgment. it's one of those cases. And the one who had the dissenting opinion, the question is, does he have to pay his share even though he had argued against it? So that's what I think the issue is, says the Gemara. I mean, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said that all you do is write the word Zakai, so then that means that we do not need any kind of indication in case there's a future suit against the court itself for having misjudged the case and causing me a loss. So according to him, you, if you were a judge, even though you argued against the decision that was wrong, you would have to pay anyway, because the court as a whole is responsible. So therefore, what's the point of spelling out who it was that disagreed with the court's opinion? He's going to have to pay. So therefore, says Rabbi Yochanan, well, why mention it then? Masha'in Cain, according to Reish Lakish, Laman D'Yomar, who says that, you know, you got to spell it out very clearly, and you got to give the names. Ploni uploni mezakin, ploni uploni mechayvim. According to that, he holds that someone who had a dissenting opinion is not responsible. Lo mishalim. And therefore, we need to put into this decision that we're writing up the fact that this person did not go along with the wrong verdict. That's the point. And Hashem will have to say that according to Reb Elazar, what did he say? I mean, he said, we say, mi divrayim. So apparently, he agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that the person who's, because we're not protecting him by writing him up, that he was the one who had the dissenting opinion, he is mechuyev to pay anyways. There's no need to write up his name, but we just want to make it very clear that this is an honest write-up and that, in fact, it was not a unanimous decision. So we find the middle way. Says the Gemara, does that make sense to you? A guy is a judge. He argues vehemently against the court's decision, which turns out to be wrong, and now we're going to make him pay, despite the fact that he did his very best to try to prevent this from happening? That doesn't seem reasonable to me. So, Laman D'Yomar Zakai Mishalim? You're telling me that the whole point is that Rabbi Yochanan holds he's going to have to pay anyway. How could he have to pay anyway? Why doesn't he tell the judges that we're wrong? Look, you idiots, if you'd listened to me in the first place, I tried to make it very clear to you, you wouldn't be paying either. Don't come to me to pay your share, you know. It's entirely your fault. So why would he have to pay? Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, so then what would be the machlokas? All right, let's try another way. Ela ikabinayu leshalume inhu menata dide. Question, actually, he for sure doesn't have to pay. That's for sure. Now the question is, if we know that the one who gave a dissenting opinion is not responsible, so now we have another question. Do the others take up his responsibility, or is each one responsible, so to speak, just for the third that he represents in the courtroom? So that may be the difference. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it just says Zakai. Why? Because anyway, it doesn't matter whether somebody agreed or disagreed. Anyway, whoever's going to have to pay is going to have to pay the full amount. So if there's only two judges that are going to have to share that full amount, so then those two judges will pay the full amount. Because we don't have to let the defendant that was misjudged over here, we don't have to let him know that actually there's only going to be a two-third compensation, because it's not true. It's none of his business. He knows that the court is responsible. Mashenken, according to Reish Lakish, that we have to spell it out. I mean, he has to know exactly how many people were in on this decision. So he has to say, ploni uploni mezakin, ploni uploni mechayvim. They are only going to pay for their share. And the baldin is going to be out whatever share they're not paying. That would be the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Don't like that either, says the Gemara. Because, I mean, what are you saying? That the guy said that he the judge was arguing. So you're telling me, according to Rabbi Yochanan, they would have to pay for his share, right? And therefore, there's no need for us to spell it out. Because as far as the litigants are concerned, they're fully covered with federal insurance policy over here. If anything goes wrong, they're going to be compensated by the court. right? That's what you're telling me. I mean, does it really make sense if they could say, the ones who are responsible, they could say to this third guy who did argue with them, they could say, well, thank you very much for arguing with us, you know. But the point is, if you had never come around here and thrown in yourself as being willing to be a member of our court, which allowed us to get into trouble, we wouldn't have been able to get into this trouble. So therefore, you're the trouble. So why should we have to pay? I understand that it's ridiculous to ask you to pay, being as you did your best to avoid the mistake. But, I mean, it's certainly your fault that there was a court and that was able to issue this verdict anyway, right? So therefore, it doesn't make sense that we should be the ones responsible as if the entire court consisted of just the two of us. And therefore, we have to split it. There was a third guy. Now, if it wouldn't have been for him, there wouldn't have been any judgment. Now, I understand that he doesn't have to pay it, but we also don't have to pay it. And that means that the litigant is out, whatever that was, that one third. So nobody's going to cover that. Doesn't that make more sense? I guess. Okay. So let's try another approach. Okay. So Ela Ikebinayu, the question is perhaps the issue that the Mishnah itself raised, which we've been conveniently ignoring this whole time. The Mishnah said you're not allowed to give out that information. Now, how come all of a sudden we come over here to this machlokas about Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and all of a sudden nobody's worried about the fact that it says, Lo telech rachil bamecha, or your holech rachil megalasod? So how did that happen? So, I mean, that may be exactly the issue. Now, it could be that if, according to Reish Lakish, you have to spell it out. So, okay, Reish Lakish may very well agree, look, you certainly can't go around afterwards and tell a guy that, well, I really think that you were the one in the right, and what can you do? They possibly, that is definitely off the wall, because that is basically giving out the information that you don't believe in the verdict. That's a whole different thing. If you're writing up a verdict and the court stands behind this verdict, nobody is saying, in my opinion, the verdict is wrong. That's something else. That's within the court. But to go over to the litigant and to say, you know, they stole your money, but what can you do? I mean, that was the language in the Mishnah. What can I do about it? You know, there were more of them than there were of me, and the dark side won. That is called Helech Rachel. Asha and Cain, this is not. So that could be that it's better, according to Reish Lakish, it's better that we have an honest write-up, which has to reflect the actual workings of the judicial system. And we're not worried about this Lo Telech Rachel if it's done in that fashion. Masha Ein Kein, Rabbi Yochanan, he says Zakai Mishum Lo Telech Rachel. He feels that any information that is not relevant, the specifics for me to know, me, the litigant, to know, so that's giving out information that's just babbling. What do you want to be, the New York Times? This is, life is supposed to be all the information that is actually worth printing. Now, this is not that kind of information, all right? So don't make a fool of yourself. Next thing you know, they'll be putting you up in the headlines. That's what he holds. Whereas Reish Lakish says, Ploni uploni mezakin, ploni uploni mechayvim, because he says, look, it may well be that you're right, the information in a sense is not your business, but the judicial functioning, which needs to be maintained as a completely honest and transparent judicial system, is more important than that. And therefore, if we're writing it up, we have to be very careful that it shouldn't be mirze kashikra, that we're just giving out documents. It's like, this is ridiculous that the court decided that he's Zakai. The court didn't decide that he's Zakai. They were fighting over this for weeks. What is this? Makes it look like it's a cut and dry thing. Okay, so that means people were going to lose their faith in the whole system. That is, makes it worthwhile for us to give out the details. Rebbe Elazar, actually, Rebbe Elazar says, look, you know, I definitely agree with Rabbi Yochanan that there is an element of Holy Krakow here. On the other hand, you do have to not make the system look like we just throw out words, you know, Zakai. So therefore, we make it very clear. We write, it turned out after our deliberations that the court said he was Zakai. Fine, that makes sense. So this is the way to write. Mi divrehem nizdake ploni. So that way it's quite clear. Mi divrehem, it turned out through our very careful examination of the case, we took a vote. That's basically what it's saying. Why do we have to give over the information about X said something and Y said something else? That is still too close to the idea of the Megalasot. The next thing that we wrote in the Mishnah was Gamru et Adavar Hayu Machnisin Otam. Who is the Otam, that we say? They would bring them. Who is them? I love these pronouns. I mean, who was the one that we took out that we're able to bring back in? So, I mean, are we talking about the Baalei Dinim? You're saying that the two litigants were brought back into the courtroom? It never said anything about we're throwing them out, did it? I mean, yes, it says that the judges are Nosei v'Notein, but that may mean that they just speak between themselves while the litigants are on the other side of the room. I mean, it didn't say that we take them out of the room. So, Hatam Kaine, I'm assuming that they were there the whole time, since it didn't say anything. Ela, it must mean that we bring the witnesses back in, because that we do say that we took the witnesses, separated them, because we didn't want them gesturing or giving any kind of support to the other witness. We needed to examine them to make sure that each one was precisely in tune with the other one. So now it must mean we call those Edim back in, and they have to say their Edut again. Why would that be? Because, as we're going to see, there's a shita that holds that you have to give the Edut together. You can't have an aid walk in on Sunday and say something, have another aid walk in on Monday and say the equivalent thing, and then put together their Edut. So there needs to be now a repetition of the Edut in front of the court so that the two Edim are testifying together. That must be what it means. But if that's true, then it would mean that the Mishnah is very clearly saying we do not paskin like Rabbi Natan. Because take a look at this Braita. In the Braita, it's clear that you can actually have testimony even though the Edim were testifying separately. Now, this Braita talks about two separate issues. One is, it starts off with something that we're not talking about right now, and that is, do they both have to witness the same event at the same moment? So the Tanakhama says, La'olam ein edutan mitzarefet, ad shiyiru shneihem ke'echad. They both have to see the event at the same time. Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha says, no, doesn't matter. Even if it's bezeh achar zeh. Now, we're going to have a long investigation about what that means. Because the bezeh achar zeh, I mean, if it means that one witness sees X lend Y $100 on Sunday, and another witness sees X lend Y $100 on Thursday, is that the same testimony? I mean, it's obviously not the same loan. That would be one way of understanding it. The other way, well, that would mean that, well, it doesn't really matter what the event was. A witness, when it comes to divrei momonos, remember, we're not talking about over here cases where we're going to be mechayev in anything. We're talking about purely civil cases. So in that event, maybe it's only the bottom line that counts. So one witness says that same Y now owes X $100. And the other witness says he owes $100. Why does it have to be the same $100? That's one possibility of understanding it. It may also mean that, let's say, an aide hears Mr. X admit that he owes Mr. Y $100 on Sunday. And the other aide hears Mr. X saying, yes, I do owe him $100 on Thursday. Well, so then it could be the same $100. That's very different because it's just hearing the basis of those $100, but it's not two separate monies that are owed. Maybe that's what the machlokas is. So we're going to take a look at that more clearly later. But right now, this is not even what we're interested in, because what we're interested in here is this next piece of the Braita, which talks about whether the Aiden have to actually be present together in the courtroom when they're made. So this is the next machlokas. Furthermore, says the Braita, Ein edutan mitkayemet bebeitin ad she'yaidu shneim ke'echad. They have to be in the courtroom together. Rabbi Natan Omer, no, why? One witness can show up today. Shomim devarav shozeh hayom. Maybe the other witness isn't available. This guy's only going to be here for a day. They don't have to be here together. Ukeshi avoch havero lebachar, after this guy's plane lands tomorrow, shomim et devarav, despite the fact that the other guy has already left. So according to Rabbi Natan, if you've got individual, separated testimonies, the court is mitzaref those testimonies. But our Mishnah says, no, you got to call them back in. Why do you have to call them back in? Aha! Must be that the Mishnah says Rabbi Nassim is wrong. And in fact, there needs to be a moment in which maybe we examine them separately, but they've got to be in that courtroom together. Hasi Menachem is just giving us a tantalizing glimpse, and then he goes blank. Good. Is Menachem back home? Ah, that's terrible. So it's the middle of the night? Oh, my gosh. All right, so then you deserve you deserve a little bit of dark. See you, boy. Okay, so does that mean that we're going to have to paskin against Rabbi Natan? No. It means we bring the Balei Dinim back in, and the Mishnah is assuming Rabbi Nechemiah Shita. Rabbi Nechemiah insists that you take out the Balei Dinim. The litigants can't be around, even in the same room, while the Dayanim are deliberating. Tanya, Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, Kach hayamin agancha nikiyeh hada'at shebirushalayim. The people that had real clear-cut brains, clear vision, pure vision, this is the way they used to do things. First, machlisin lebalei dinim v'shomin divrehem. The judges would bring in the two balei dinim, listen carefully. They then bring in the witnesses. Vishomin Devrehem, then everybody is sent out. Motzim Otam Lechutz, within chambers, they're no Simonot Nimedavar, and then they bring them back in. But wait, the Otanya, there's another Braita that says, Gomru et Hadavar Machlisim et Ha'edim. Now don't give me this, because the Braita says, Beferish, we bring the witnesses back in. And that means specifically because those witnesses have to repeat the Eidus. Well, that obviously, Ahidolok Rabbi Natan. Well, we understand that there is a machlokas here. You wanted to claim that the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Natan. I'm not saying that there aren't Braitot that go, you know, against Rabbi Natan. Of course there are. But our Mishnah can be understood the way that we explained it and works out even according to Rabbi Natan. Anyway, can we get back to that first business about Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha saying that they could see two separate things? I don't quite understand. How does that work? So it says, Leolam, that's the first part, not the last part of the Braitan. First part, which was the question of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, not the question of Machlokas of Rabbi Natan. So it said over there that according to the Tanakhama, they've got to see the same event simultaneously. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, it doesn't matter, even if they see it one after the other. Can you explain to me, first of all, I mean, what is this based on, this machlokas? Well, ibaitem akra v'ibaitem asvar. Look, there's two ways to read this. I mean, you can understand it as a machlokas of how to understand the meaning of a pasuk, or it could just be a question of the rationale. Let's take a look at the rationale. Iboite mesvara. Amone de komasid hai, lo komasid hai. The Tanakhama says, I don't understand. How can you put together testimony when you have one witness talking about one money, one $100 bill, which was a Sunday $100 bill, and the other witness is talking about a Thursday $100 bill? I mean, what does one have to do with the other? It's like two completely different events. How do you put it together? And Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is saying that the meaning of a monetary testimony is not an event. It's true that the meaning of testimony that leads to anything that has to do in a non-civil case with non-civil penalties. Fine. Obviously, there it's the event that the Eidus has to recreate. But if you're talking about a monetary testimony, it's ultimately, as anything in money is, it's always the bottom line. And the bottom line is, I say Ozem. $100. How do you know? Because I saw him lend him $100 on Sunday. Well, I too say he owes him $100. How do you know? I saw him lend him $100 on Thursday. Bottom line, we both agree he owes him $100. That's all that counts. So when it comes to money, you only look at the bottom line. And that's what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha holds. We're not talking about an event. We're not talking about a specific $100, because a specific $100 is meaningless in terms of money. And therefore, amona be'alma tarvayo kamasi. Are they not both agreeing that this guy owns? Generally speaking, bottom line, he owes him $100. Thank you. So we're both on the same page. That could be the machlokas. Or it could actually be a difference in how to understand the pasuk. Because if you take a look at the Pasuk, very interesting. The Pasuk writes, V'hu aid, o ra'a, o yada. Now, what in the world does that mean? I mean, it means there's, he said, either he witnessed it, or he saw it, or he knew it. Is that, or he is a witness through either seeing or through knowing. So I don't even understand what the difference is between those. So the Braita says, and there's another pasuk which is very nogia. So it says beferish in the pasuk, lo yakum eid echad beish al pishnei edim o al pishlosha edim yakum davar. Famous pasuk. Now, if the pasuk said beferish lo yakum eid echad, the moment that you say the word lo yakum eid, do you know how to read? What does an eid mean? An eid means a single witness. That's a Lashon Yochid. So all it needed to write was, lo yakum eid. Eini yodea shu echad? I mean, I know how to read. If it says witness, it means a witness. A witness means a single witness. So why do you have to spell it out? A single witness. Just say a witness, which means a single witness. So matam lomer echad. This teaches me an extremely important halacha, which has implications all over, which is a b'nei av. So it creates a general rule that wherever we find the word aid, if it doesn't say echad, then it means two, because aid does not mean a witness. It means a testimony. And therefore, unless it writes one, it means two, because that's what a testimony is. So komo kom shenemar aid, it means two unless it actually spells out one. Okay, now let's take a look back at that pasuk that we mentioned earlier. V'hu aid? V'hu aid? Wait a minute. How can who be an aid? It would be a haim who's an aid. What does that mean? So why did the Torah now say who? If it isn't a who, it's a haim. So avke rachmana b'loshen chad. So the Torah used what is essentially, yeah, it sounds good, but it's a contradiction in terms of the underlying grammar, the halakhic grammar, right? So the Torah specified, we'll talk about a single aid, even though I'm saying on the side, by the way, he's really them, to teach a halakha that ad dechosu tarvayhu kechad. He has to be he in the sense that they're looking at the same thing. So these two sets of eyes are a single he. That's the point. And therefore, it's teaching us that you can't combine edut. Whereas Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha holds, v'idach, it means v'hu eid, he is a witness, colon. That would mean, o ra'a, o yada. That's the whole point of the pasuk. You could be a witness, which is a plural witness, because you can combine one guy who knows, one guy who saw. How can you combine one? So imagine a case where one guy says, I know that he owes him $100 because I saw the loan. Okay, so you were ra'a. The other guy says, I know he owes him $100 because he told me, you be my witness, I owe this. So he's a yada. And we're calling that as brilliant, right? So we're calling that an aid, meaning a testimony, even though it's combining one guy who sees something and one guy who knows something. It's amazing. So therefore, on the contrary, it's coming to teach us that if you've got two separate events and a monetary issue which join together in a bottom line, that is considered to be v'hu aid. Wow. Okay, now, we then have the other machlokes. Ein edu ten mitkayemet bebeitin, ad sheedu shneim keechad. So then we were talking about Rabbi Natan's machlokes. Keep in mind, two separate issues over here. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha about the nature of the edut, and Rabbi Natan about the giving over of the edus. These are unrelated arguments. So, the Tanakhama says they both have to say their testimony at the same time, they're in court together. Acha yidu shneim keechad. Whereas Rabbi Natan says, no, shomim dvarav shoze hayom. The next guy wasn't there that day. His plane arrives on the morrow. So, kishiyavo chaver lebachar, shomim dvarav. Okay. Now, what is that an argument about? Well, here too. It might be an argument that's just about the rationale. It might be an argument about how we understand the pasuk. Let's take that step by step. So I could tell you, listen, it's a very simple logical argument. The Tanakhama says, when a single witness walks into court, that testimony only has legal validity in being able to be mechayev someone a shvua, right? Otherwise, the lo yakum edechad be'ish, it has no validity. If a guy would walk in and say, I could testify that so-and-so owes a guy $100, we'll say, you know, we'll pick him up and throw him out and say, why don't you write to the gossip column? What are you doing here in court? But we won't do that because we know that that single witness does have some legal validity when it would come to be mechayev that other person a shvua. So it's not as if he's thrown out, but he's given a very limited delineation as a witness. This is a shvua witness, right? He wasn't even coming, as far as the courtroom is concerned. Lemamona, he's lokaati. He wasn't there. So how can you combine testimony whose legal validity was only in terms of a shvua on another day with another witness, which is for a shvua, and now put it together to actually be motzi momon? I mean, that is a different status of testimony, and therefore there's no grounds to combine that. Whereas Rabbi Nassim says, now, hold on a second. You're telling me that if they show up in court together, then we could put it together. Okay, how exactly do we do that? We take some cables, connect their brains together, and now they function at the very same instant. Their mouths are moving as one. I mean, well, I understand what you mean. What's the difference? They're anyway talking separately, for God's sake. They're two separate people. So just because you're all challenged by this time business, so you're dimensionally challenged. But the pasuk doesn't care about your dimensional challengement. And therefore, we obviously have allowed for separate brains to be saying separate things. I understand what the difference is, whether it's on the same day or on different days. It's not going to be in the same plank time, is it? So what's the difference? That's all. And the mitzarfinu nu. So who cares? So achinami litzarfinu. That's the logic. V'baitemo. No, I could tell you that actually, it's a pasuk. It says, in lo yagid v'nasa avono. So here we have this halacha, a person who knows testimony, and he doesn't tell us, he doesn't provide that testimony. That is the end of the pasuk that we had, v'hu eid, o ra'a, o yada. So then it says, in lo yagid v'nasa avono. So if he doesn't say his testimony, then he is considered to be a chayev for depriving us of the din. So now, basically, they argue in the following. The Tanakhama and Rabbi Nassin are agreeing with the Rabbanan, the Pligei Alei, the Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. So there's the question of how to talk about the first part of the pasuk, where the first part of the pasuk was, how do we understand v'hu eid o ra'ah o yada? Right? Okay. So then, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, the Yada and Ra'a was in order to put together separate edus, meaning they saw separate things. And according to the Chachamim, it's coming to tell me, no, they have to actually see the same thing. So then both of these second Tanoim, the Tanakhama and Rabbi Nassim, they both agree with the Rabbana that the first part of the pasuk is telling us they had to witness the same event. So therefore, the question is, since the end of that same pasuk that says Eidos consists of witnessing the same event, continues on with the Haggadah, V'im lo yagid. So it's comparing the Haggadah to the Re'iyah. And therefore, that's our machlokas. The Tanakhama holds, Mar Sova, that mentioning in the same pasuk the Re'iyah of the Eidos with the Haggadah of the Eidos creates a Hekesh, Makshin and Haggadah Re'iyah, which teaches us that in the same way that we've just said, you absolutely must see it together, because we're saying everybody agrees with the Tanakhama against Rabbi Shimon Korcha, then you also have to testify together, not because of the logic, but because the Torah compared the two. Whereas Rabbi Nosson says, no, that does not follow. The Im Lo Yagid is not a Hekesh. Look, it maybe if it had said, V'hu Eid, Im Lo Yagid. So then we'd compare the Eidos to the Haggadah. But over here, we've got these additional words, V'hu Ra'ah Oyada. So that separates between the concept of the Eidos and the concept of the Haggadah of the Eidos. Maybe that's what they're arguing in. Anyway, how do we paskin in this? So Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim is a cute story in which Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim was trying very hard to get Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Chanina smicha. Now, it wasn't easy to get smicha, as you know, and it never worked out. Veloka mistayeya milta, he was not able, you know, because we've got all of these things, you need the three dayanim, it has to be in a place where you're giving smicha, and then they have to accept the fact that he's roy for smicha, and Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim was still young, and he hadn't proven himself, and so on. Anyway, one day, it was very fortunate that they were sitting together, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim was sitting together in front of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina was there in the audience. It wasn't the audience, remember, it was the three rows of the Talmidim that often sit in front of the Beis Din, and they're trying to learn the ways that the Dayanim are paskening. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan says, does anybody know, Mika Diyah, does anybody know whether we pasken like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha or not in this question? So do they have to see the same thing? So Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim whispers to Rabbi Yochanan, psst, that guy, he knows, which is, so, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim says, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, see that kid that's sitting in the audience over there? He knows. Oh, says Rabbi Yochanan, he knows. Great. Let him say. Let him stand up and say. Let him say very clearly right now. Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim says, I mean, it's not really nice that he should say, why don't you give him smicha first, and then we move him up here, and then he'll tell us what he knows. I mean, like this, we're going to ask a kid to say something. All right, so Rabbi Yochanan says, okay, I'll give him smicha. Fine, so he gives him smicha. So then Rabbi Yochanan says, okay, my boy, Bini, Emorli Ketzad Shamata. So now, tell me exactly what you heard. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina says, or he's now Rav Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, you understand? So he says to Rabbi Yochanan, Kach Shamat, I heard that Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha is Moda to Rabbi Nosson, that the witnesses do not have to be made together. And therefore, since we paskin, we said before, we do paskin like Rabbi Nosson, apparently we'll paskin like Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha. Says Rabbi Yochanan, oh my God. I was a garbage man. I didn't need to know that. Any idiot knows that. I can't believe I gave this kid smicha. This is what I needed to give smicha for. I mean, it's so obvious. Who doesn't know that? Hashta uma ikar hariya bahadeh hadadeh. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha lo ba'inan. The essence of testimony, you would have thought, is what it is that you see. Even that, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, does not have to be simultaneous. Does anybody in his right mind think that if you don't even have to see the same event, that you would have to be made at the same time to different events? Ha! Who would think such a thing? Haggadah, me boy? I never question that. Sheesh. Well, what can you do? I already gave him smicha. Omalei, look, you're really a lucky boy. Once you're up here, don't go down. So it'll be Alita Lo Tered. Omer Rabbi Zer, we see from here that once a Gavra Rabba, given the Stamich Somich, once somebody who was Roy, even though the actual event maybe was a mistake, but he's a gavra rabba. If he got smicha, he holds on to that smicha. You can't claim it was given under false pretenses because he is ro'i l'smicha anyway. Anyway, going further into the question, bottom line, does halacha go aliba de Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha? Before we actually can paskin that, we realize we don't even know what Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha meant. Because as we mentioned originally, when we spoke about Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, there's two very different ways of understanding what he means when he says you could put two things together. So, Amar Rabchiya bar Rav and Amar Rav, the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, whether we're talking about karkaot or whether we're talking about metaltalim. Now, that is not really the difference that we normally would have between real estate and between non-real properties. That's not what it means. What it means is, if you think about it, it's as we talked about before, when it comes to real estate, there is no possession. The fact that you're on a piece of real estate does not mean you own it. So the moment that you admit about a piece of real estate, this is not mine, then the person who it belongs to or who you were ready to admit it belongs to can just kick you out of the property. You can't say, well, I'm in possession and I changed my mind. I was kidding around. You can't say that because there is no possession. Masha Engen. Where you're talking about metaltalin, and the way that Rashi understands metaltalin over here is that it's just a reference to a halva'a. Okay, so when you use the word metaltalin, what we mean is our bottom line issue, what we were talking about before. The monetary question is always a function of the bottom line. So what he's saying is, once you say that it doesn't matter whether it's real estate or whether it's something that has to do with a loan. So then that would mean that whether it is that what you saw was the actual din, because if a guy says, I made it, this is not mine, and one person hears it today, another person hears it tomorrow, well, it's exactly the same thing. He's saying this piece of property belongs to another guy. So that's the equivalent. I understand that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha would be willing to say that that's considered to be seeing the same thing. But if you're talking about a guy being maybe taking out a loan today and taking another loan out on Thursday, I mean, how would that be the same testimony? Maybe not. Nonetheless, Rav, according to Rav Chiya bar Ravin, paskin like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha under any and all circumstances. But Ula said, no, we could paskin like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha when it makes sense to combine what they're saying. But it doesn't make sense to talk about Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha's separate issues if you are talking about two separate loans. Omaleya Abaya, so Abaya said to Ula, what do you mean the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha bekarkaot? Whoever argued on him when it came to karkaot? Halacha, you're saying that they're arguing? Michal de Pligi? Actually, you know what Rababa Amar Ravuna Amar Rav said? And this was in the name of Rav also, you know? What he said in the name of Rav is that the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha when it comes to Edus Karka, because over there's nothing to combine. You're seeing the same issue. Vitani Ravidi Barovin, Benezika de Vekarna. We know that in Karna's Beis HaMedrash, they had Breitot. Now, those Breitot were not Breitot that had gone through the sifting process of the Breitot that was Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia's work. And therefore, it was not a binding Breitot. So, as we're going to see, we don't consider it to be proof of concept just because it's a Breitot. However, we do know that there was the Shita that they held in the Beis HaMedrash where they had worked through Seder Nezikin in Karna's yeshiva, and it said over there that the Chachamim are moded to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha in certain cases. For instance, in the Edut of a Bechor. So, the Edut of a Bechor means that we see an animal and it has a mum. It's a Bechor. The din is an animal with a Bechor. You're allowed to shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash as a Bechor, and it does not have that Kedusha. However, if a Kohen, who is the one who benefits from the Bechor, claims that this is a mum that allows him to eat, we say, nah, we don't trust Kohanim as far as we can throw him. Because what they would do would make a mum in a Bechor. If you make the mum in the Bechor, then you're not allowed to eat the Bechor. And therefore, we need to have testimony that this mum came on its own. It was a natural occurring thing. And the Rabbanan were kones, a Kohen, who made a mum, that he's never going to be allowed to eat that Bechor. Fine. So now, if we have one witness who says they saw a mum fall naturally on this Bechor on Sunday, and then another witness says, I saw this mum fall on Thursday, that's okay. Because here, too, the whole idea was not that it's a d'oraisa or anything. We just want to make sure we've got two witnesses that are saying that this Bechor is allowed to be shechted. That's all. So that is the same testimony. Here, for sure, it's a bottom line. Furthermore, they agree. That means that the Chachomim agree to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha when it comes to real estate. Because, as we said before, it's the same thing. If the guy says it's not his field, then it's the same not his field whenever he says it. Furthermore, we put together separate testimonies regarding the various years of Chazakah. So as we saw this before, we have a witness that says, I saw him eat it in year one. Another witness, two witnesses say year two. But we had one witness, there's a Mitztarif with all of them. Another witness says year three. We can put that all together. And the other place where they are also on the same page is v'chein shebet bein v'shebet bat. If we need to determine legally whether a child is pubescent or not, they can also be mitzaref their testimony, because all that's important is that both witnesses are saying, we know that signs of puberty have appeared on this boy or on this girl. We'll talk about the precise case in a moment. So it seems clear that they're only arguing about metatalin. And you claim that we paskin like Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha when it comes to karka. They never argued about karka. Listen, man, what's your problem? Gavra, gavra karamita, what? Because Ula claims that the Chachamim argue with Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha even in terms of the real estate. And Rabbi Abba Rabidi Barovin, that was quoted in this Braita, which is not a good enough Braita to destroy the other opinion, they hold that they're not arguing. Okay, fine, so you got an argument. Thank you very much. First argument you ever met. They don't agree. Okay, so now just how do we understand this business of the same thing is true for testimony about puberty? So what does that mean? You've got two witnesses. So one is able to identify, echad omer achat begaba, vechad omer achat bekreisa. So you got one witness who said, well, I observed a pubic hair in this area. And another one says, I observed a pubic hair in another area, which is one towards the back, one towards the front. It doesn't mean literally bekreis sour, but we have to be talking obviously about pubic hair, not abdominal hair, but fine. Okay. So we're just using nice language about it. And that is not obviously what we're talking about, because there neither witness saw anything meaningful legally. There wasn't a single witness that could say, I saw two pubic hairs, which is what is necessary in order to establish puberty. So that's not only putting together two witnesses, it's neither witness said anything. It's a chatzi dover. Besides being a chatzi edus, you can only put together two witnesses where each one saw two hairs, which would be each one saw the state of puberty. And that's why we're made it, because the bottom line is the state. So, Eli, echad omer shtayim begaba, vechad omer shtayim bekreisa. Bottom line, do we paskin like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha? So now we understand that the cases are not the same. We're going to have to worry about whether we're talking about separate things, or we're talking about witnessing the same thing, or how exactly do we know which Yeshua ben Korcha element we're paskining like? Omer of Yosef, I'm saying over, in Ula's name, that halachic Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, bein bekarkaot, bein mimetaltalim, that it doesn't matter, and that's a different Ula, obviously, because a minute ago we said, Ula said, we only pass like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha ben Nogea real estate. Well, Rabbi Yosef says, well, that's not what I heard from Ula. I heard that we paskin, either way, we paskin like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, according to which they do argue about both cases, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is actually correct in both cases. But these Rabbanan came from Mechuza, and they said that we heard from Rabbi Zera, Mishmei de Rav, that only Benogea real estate do we paskin like him. Bekarkaot, yes. But Bemetaltalim, no. Now, that would make sense, because this would be Rav's consistent reason. Rav going l'shitate. The Omar Rav, hoda'a achar hoda'a. Hoda'a achar halva'a. Halva'a achar. So, we have, first of all, two cases. Those cases are mitzvah. Let's say one guy says he admitted owing $100 on Sunday. The other guy says he admitted owing $100 on Thursday. Or maybe one guy says, I saw him lend him $100 on Sunday. And another guy says he admitted that he owed $100 on Thursday. That would be mitztarev, because both are giving testimony about the same $100, as we're going to be talking about later. How do we know that? However, if one aide saw a loan on Sunday and another aide saw a loan on Thursday, then obviously they are not talking about the same $100, right? Or if he admitted on Sunday, I owe him $100, and then on Thursday, the other witness says, I saw him lend him $100, so it's obviously not the same $100, because that didn't exist until Thursday. So then we do not put these two testimonies together, and we do not go according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Okay, so then this is completely consistent with what Rav said before. It makes sense to be mitzarev testimony if they're talking about the same $100, but it does not make sense if they're talking about two completely different events and it's not the same one. So this is Rav Lishitato. Now, Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak bumped into Ravuna Bered Reb Yeshua, and he said to him, I don't understand really why it makes any difference. I mean, when we say halva'a achar halva'a, that is not going to be mitztarev, because it's obviously two separate loans. Okay, so what's the reason? Because they're talking about two separate events. Money to kachazi'ai, lo kachazi'ai. The $100 that was there on Sunday to aid number one is obviously a different $100 than is owed on Thursday by aid number two. But that should be true even if it was hoda'a achar hoda'a. If a guy says on Sunday, I owed him $100, and then he says on Thursday, I owe him $100, what gives you the idea that it's the same $100? Why would you jump to conclusions that it's the same $100? This guy is being moded to $100. This guy is being moded to a different $100, so to speak. When I say this guy, I mean the Adim who saw this guy. So it's not necessarily the same $100. So why does Rav make that distinction? It's not a logical distinction. Oh, you're right, Ravuna. Obviously, what Rav was talking about is where the person told the second witness, by the way, this $100 that I'm telling you I owed, I already told Joe on Sunday about this $100. So therefore, it's the same $100. So now we know he himself says it's the same $100. Ode le nami kami ploni. Says Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak, that's very nice. But what does that have to do with the price of eggs in China? We're talking about being mitzarev testimony. To be mitzarev the testimony, the first witness also has to know it's the same $100. Now it's only the second witness who says, this is the same $100 I was moted to Joe on Sunday. But Joe has no idea that this is the same $100 that he was moda to George on Thursday. So it still doesn't help us. Akati Batra Yada, the first Witness, however, comma, lo yada. So how can you combine the testimony? Well, says Ravuna, obviously, the guy went back and he told Mr. Sunday, by the way, you know that $100 that I was moted to you about on Sunday, remember? Well, I just admitted it to this other guy today on Thursday. So now both of them know that it's the same $100. Oh, whew, said Ravuna Bar Yitzchak to Ravuna. Thank heavens, because I thought I was going nuts. People were talking nonsense. Tanuach da'atcha, may the Lord grant you ease, because you put my mind at ease. Hinach da da'ati, Ravuna says, did I? Boy, are you stupid if you believed what I said. Because it makes no sense. Why are you feeling at ease? Let me relieve you of your ease. Oh, my nechusa, what are you feeling so good about? You ready to listen to every stupidity? Actually, Rava, some say it was Rav Sheshes, they came along with this axe and they cut right through it. Flimsy argument, said they, and threw the axe at me. Because what they said was, this is exactly the same case then. Because what we're saying over here, if that's how we understand it, so then it's exactly the same case of a hoda'ah achar halva'ah. Think about it. We had on Sunday, we had a loan. So somebody sees the loan. Now we have on Thursday, the guy admits that he owes the loan. Now, in order for us to put together those two edus the way that you, Rav Huna, just claimed, he would have had to say that I admitted this $100 on Thursday to another guy. So then there's no difference between the two cases. If it all boils down to each witness knowing through the very person who gave the hoda'ah that this was a hoda'ah on the same money, what the heck is the difference whether it was an actual loan or whether it was just a hoda'ah? It boils down to the same issue. It's what the person was told by the person who owed the money. Why would we say two cases, huh? Didn't think of that one, did you, man? Yeah. Said Rav Nachman to Rav Huna, you know, that's what they say about you. I never believed them. I thought you were a nice guy where after you made me feel good, you let me remain feeling good. But people say, you know what he's like? He's the kind of guy, Rav Huna, he's the kind of guy that first he chops down trees. But then he goes ahead and he plants them right back where they were. So you chop down all the objections, you know, and I'm feeling good. Whew, thank God we got rid of that problem. And I come back the next morning and there's a bigger tree in the place. That's what you always do. You always give answers and then you show people that they're stupid for believing the answers. Now I know what kind of guy you are. Anyway, that is therefore not a good solution necessarily. Nahardoi Amre, as far as the halacha lamaisa, they say in Narda, which we remember we had before, that whenever we use those words, they say in Narda, it's a reference to Reb Chama, that bein oda achar oda, bein oda achar halva'a, bein halva'a achar halva'a, bein halva'a achar oda'a, we always are mitzaref because the bottom line is only about bottom lines. It's not about events and about finding out about the particular $100 bill that was part of the bottom line. Bottom lines don't reflect particular $100 bills. And therefore, the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha because the underlying logic of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is that monetary issues are essentially undefined in terms of units. They're only not particulars, they're only bottom lines. So they represent values and not particular things or events. That's Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. We paskin like that actually across the board. And that gets us, today, to the end of a very long daf, and we'll start the next sugya Bezrat Hashem tomorrow. And we are a little bit beyond our time for our mishnah.
Fabulous job.
Thank you, Shmuel. I thought you were coming at me when I saw you. You know, I thought you were coming at me. What do you mean? Why can't we fit in a couple of mishnahs here and there? And, oh, gosh, I was wondering what was going to happen. And I figured, well, you know, Gavi's going to throw Ori at me. He was very disappointed. I wanted to hear the Mishnayos. Thank you. Thank you for letting me get away with this. Okay. Have a wonderful day, everyone. This Surot. Sorry?
Yasher Kof to Reb Barnea for keeping it together without any puns or interruptions.
Wow. Wow. This is a special day. We should actually have to. Do you have golden stars?
Could I tell a special story?
Oh, no. Shmoo, you did it. You did it. You know what? They call Ayin Hara, you know, never open up your mouth. However, Shmoo, this is a special story. It's not just a regular story. This is a special story. We wouldn't want to miss a special story. And even Richie's sitting there waiting and saying, I got time for a special story. Sock it to me, baby.
Okay.
In order to combat Bible criticism, I learned Mesech Sofrim with David Solomon. And we continue to do the other Mesech Gos, but we avoided Mesech Smachos because one doesn't do that. But now both of us lost our mothers. We're in a Bama, so we're doing Mesech Smachos. It's the last one.
Wonderful.
In the sixth parak, and it says like this. B'yom HaRishon L'B'yom HaSheni Lo Yikenes Tahar HaBayis, the other. But beyond Mashishi, he goes and he's makif. And then it says, who's makif l'smo marabayis? And avel, a menuda, somebody who has a sick relative, lo leinu, somebody who lost something. So the third case is, somebody has a sick relative, makif, they say, what is it? I have somebody sick, and everybody davens. So I said that over at the Kiddush, at the Rav Kahana Kiddush. That's part of what the Harabayis does. Josh Wander goes regularly up to Har HaBayis. And last week, Shem Yerachem, his wife got seriously ill, was going in for operation. And so he went up to Har HaBayis. He arranged special permission with the police. He went the other way. And the group that goes up regularly greeted him and asked him, Malacha Makif Mismo. And he said, my wife, Tali Bet Mas Rachel, is very sick. And everybody davened for him. That chazal came to life. I haven't had that, you know, like, wow, the timing.
Beautiful. Excellent. All right. A refuah shlema to Josh Wander's wife. Bezrat Hashem. Kol tov, everybody. Thank you for sharing that with us. Okay. And looking forward to being with you again tomorrow. Bye. Kol tov.